Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Ford, featuring available sync with My Ford Touch. Sync with My Ford Touch gets you to your destination with integrated turn-by-turn directions and directional arrows displayed on screen. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast episode 101. I almost said 401. It seems like 401, Scott. But
101 episodes? Like 100 came and went while I was in the dental chair getting my face lasered off? That's what happened?
Yeah. Are you okay? You can talk.
I'm all right. I'm fine now. It's been a week. I was fine literally minutes after it was completed, just leading up to it with some trouble. And it happened to happen right during recording. It wasn't that he was even suffering that I couldn't record. I would have done this with like wires hanging off my face, Tom, because why would I ever miss an episode of Forecast unless the episode happened while they were lasering my face?
I think we missed an opportunity to stream live.
We could have.
Of your face being lasered.
Yeah, and the lady's always telling me to turn my phone off. That would have been fun as well to deal with that.
Can't. Doing a show. All right, you just be talking. joining us today, by the way, I had my dentist appointment in the morning today, just so you know.
How'd that go?
It went fine. It was just a cleaning. Well, I didn't get any face lasering done, so it was a lot simpler. Joining us to predict the future today, we're happy to have Mr. Trace Beaulieu from Cinematic Titanic and author of Silly Rhymes for Belligerent Children, as illustrated by Mr. Len Peralta. Trace, welcome.
Thank you very much. Please don't laser my gums.
We will try not to. We were trying to leave the gums out of it. I know. It's kind of gross, huh?
It is.
It's part of the contract. No gum lasering to any of our guests. Also joining us, Ryan Shrout, editor-in-chief at PC Perspective, host of the PC Perspective podcast, and This Week in Computer Hardware, right here on TWiT. How's it going,
Ryan? That's right. Thanks for having me. If I'd known dental work was a prerequisite, I would have planned ahead better.
Okay, we'll give you an out this time.
All right.
Just brush your teeth and floss tonight.
Okay. All right. I can
we'll
do that.
We'll call it even. Let's start off with a prediction from one of our listeners. This one comes from John B., who says, I predict that in the not-too-distant future, the current way of electing leaders will be completely changed and candidates will become anonymous during the election phase. Voting will consist of voters taking a survey, answering multiple choice questions on how they would deal with the larger issues, the choices being each candidate or party's solution, and your vote will be cast for whichever candidate best matches your choices. This method would eliminate the popularity aspect of voting and ensure it stays that way. Any candidate whose identity becomes widely known would be deemed ineligible.
Well, okay. This sounds fine and all. I kind of get why he would want this or why this seems like an ideal way to elect our officials. But because you're stripping away all of the emotion, right? You're taking away all of the gut reaction to appearance, to manner of speaking, to all of these factors that sort of add up. And in this case, if you would have done this election or this method on the election in the 60s, you would have ended up with Richard Nixon instead of JFK. The president is my guess. That's always been the theory anyway, right?
That
because
the
JFK
debate
looks so great.
Yeah, that's the conventional wisdom.
The radio people were like, yeah, I totally give it to Nixon. The TV people were like, no way, JFK won that debate. So I don't know if that's good. Like, I kind of do want my leaders to have, you know, to be dynamic.
To be sexy able to looking.
Speak their mind. Yeah, to be a little sexy looking, I suppose. Trace, how do you feel about an election process that takes away all the surface stuff and is just purely about record and voting?
I think it's kind of idealistic. Given the choice, I would vote for Nixon again today. We had a mock election in my school, and I voted for him then. And
I thought you were going to say you voted for him 10, this last time around.
Yeah. You know, maybe the ugliest people could do the best job. I'm not sure. They wouldn't have to concentrate on grooming. They could just get straight to work, you know, show up. Hey, they could stay at home. They could podcast their administration.
We save us a lot of money on the White House. You know, I think there's an interesting problem with this, which is that aren't there intangibles that go into being a president that aren't easily quantified in a multiple choice essay? I mean, if you ever have done these online multiple choice things where they tell you who to vote for in any election, you usually either end up with Pat Buchanan or Dennis Kucinich. Like, it pushes people towards the extremes. And everybody's like, well, wait a minute, I don't really want one of those guys because they're not experienced, or I think they're a little crazy, or, you know, like, there's more to it than just the policies, don't you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I like the idea that the smartest guy wins, and I would like to believe that that would eventually be the case, but I don't think it's going to happen. But I do think that it takes a lot of other stuff to be a leader. Dynamics is one of them, right? So you can have all the right answers, but if you stutter your way through your conversations with the media, how are you going to interact with other world leaders and those types of things as well, that I think need to be taken into consideration in any kind of election like that?
I do like the idea of having an impartial voting where you're not voting for a person, you're voting for the type of person. Maybe it should be a reality show.
That's not a bad idea. Actually, that's a great
Survivor
idea.
Survivor president?
We'll get more participation.
Or President Shore or something. We need to have and it needs to be a really bad, humiliating reality show. I want a reality show where people are eating pig rectums by the end of that thing. That's how I will vote for my next president.
You either become president or win $1 million.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Or get kicked off the other.
Loser gets presidency, winner gets the money.
I thought it was going to be the big finale. $1 million or the presidency? Find out next.
You just get thrown into the Potomac if you lose, and you're a humiliated. I mean, everyone knows good reality TV is based on the idea that there must be abject humiliation throughout, and this would not be a good electoral process without that humiliation. We already kind of have some of that. That's happening now in the debates. We get a lot of humiliation. Why not make it official? Get Jeff Probst. He's not doing anything right now. He's off season. Get him in there. Get him hosting. Done.
The real answer, of course, is to require some sort of test for each voter, not for the test for the people running.
Oh, you're one of those. You think there should be a license to vote?
I think there should. I think you should have a basic understanding of the issues before you're allowed to go in there and hit a button.
Should we have a license, Trace?
I'm awfully fond of a concept that Arthur C. Clarke provided in, I think it was Imperial Earth. I think that was the book, where a candidate should be, any person should just be dragged kicking and screaming into office, and they're only released if they do a good job.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that. That's not bad.
It's the right motivation, exactly. I mean, I was thinking about putting this on like a Google Plus or a blog or something, to say, look, we always say every time there's an election, well, I don't like any of these guys. That's kind of the thing you hear from people. I want to know if we could just pick someone, anyone, without having to go through the whole process of nomination and parties and all of that. If we could just pick someone to be president, who would we pick? Do we think there is anyone who's qualified to be president?
I have no idea.
I think that's the biggest problem right there.
Yeah. Yep. You left us a little speechless there, because that is kind of the scary thing here. Like, I don't, that's why I get goofy about it. And I think it'd be fun to just throw it all in the wind and say, let's do a reality show. Cause I can't stand the state of politics right now on either side, on any fence. I don't care where you go. It's real bleak. And to me, the way you shake things up is you get weird with it. That's probably a terrible idea and a little anarchist of me, but I like the idea a lot.
More entertaining.
Yeah, exactly.
At the least.
If we can't have good government, at least let's have some entertainment. Send us your predictions. Email them to forecastpodcast@gmail.com or post them up on our blog, forecastpodcast.com. Let's get into the short-term predictings. These are things you think will happen sooner rather than later. And Trace, we'll start with you. What is your short-term prediction?
Water and food. We're going to run out of both.
And food.
How quickly do you think?
I think it's going to be within the next 15 to 20 years. It's starting. We can stop it. I used to live in Los Angeles, and it scared me because it's a desert, and they're using water like crazy.
You have a lot of lakes in Minnesota, though. Are you going to?
We're draining them right now. We're trying to keep them away from the rest of the country.
So stockpiling them.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
We're going to drain them into a giant aquifer, and then you can't have any.
Awesome. Water. So we have these three staples of the show. It's the big water wars and or shortage of whatever short or far-flung future. It's synthetic meat, and it's Tom will all be made of cheese comment that he always makes every week. This is the one I think is probably the most realistic, the one that is probably the most true and therefore the scariest. I was reading something the other day where people were calling bottled water users the smokers of this decade. And I don't exactly know what they meant by that, but I think what they mean is they're the sort of annoying people that are doing this thing that's doing more harm than good. It used to be a thing we thought was a good thing, but now it's kind of this terrible thing to do, a bit like the history of cigarettes, perhaps. But every time I get a water bottle, I think, man, it probably took more water in some part of the process to make this than the amount I'm drinking. In other words, I'm getting about, you know, a fifth of the water out of it that is being put into it to manufacture the stuff on some large scale. I mean, this stuff with water stuff, just period, just generally scares the crud out of me. And that old saying that my grandpa used to tell me about, which is, we've got the same amount of water as we'll ever have. It just gets evaporated and comes back to Earth and gets evaporated and comes back again. I'm starting to think my grandpa was smoking crack a little bit, because I don't think that's, you know, actually
that's an oversimplification.
True.
It's accurate,
but
you can't drink all that water. You know,
right.
I would have told Grandpa, well, go drink some ocean water then.
Right. Or go drink the water that came out of the nuke plant and is now sitting in a puddle somewhere in the Nevada desert or whatever. It's all a little frightening. Yeah. I interrupted somebody.
Well, I was saying, how does desalination not address this? Right. So I've been to Abu Dhabi and Dubai, and they have invested a lot of infrastructure in desalination because, as you might imagine, they have very little natural, you know, unsalty water. So, yeah. I mean, how does that not solve our problem in the long run?
Trace, this is your prediction. Do you have an answer to that?
That's going to help. But I think there's you saw how people reacted on Black Friday over game cartridges. Can you imagine what it's going to be like when it's actually food or water? And I think, yeah, the desalinization is a great, great thing, and it'll probably help. But in the short term, we're just not there yet.
Yeah.
We could learn to drink oil.
We've got less of that, though, don't we?
Desalination has limits to it right now, just because of cost more than anything. And those places that are able to use it, like Abu Dhabi, have a lot of money to throw around to make it work. The way we basically did the 20th century version of that by shipping water and pumping it into Las Vegas and Los Angeles and creating these cities where there's no real natural reason there should be a city at all. So I'm not saying it won't continue to get better, but I think I agree with Trace, is whether we can get it to be better in time or not is questionable. Food, on the other hand, is much more of a preventable disaster, because we have the carrying capacity and we're actually growing enough food, but we're instead using some of our capacity to do things that maybe we shouldn't, growing the kinds of foods that aren't affordable, or growing foods. Here in the United States, we have these subsidies to grow food for fuel, which it's debatable whether that actually brings fuel prices down, but it removes acreage from food production. These are serious issues. I'm not sure. I don't know. Did you say 10, 12 years?
Well, as the population grows and we consume more of both of those items, there's a curve that will be reached, and we'll just miss a crisis. But I just know that if I had to live on the food I grew, I would already be dead.
If I had to live on the food I grew, I would hate apples.
Oh man!
I have an apple. An apple tree. That's pretty much it.
I only
did tomatoes this year. We did tomatoes this year, and I was sick of tomatoes this year. So yeah. I would have to diversify a little bit. It's interesting, though. I mean, what Ryan said is true. I just don't know what point we get to where the fire is hot enough underneath our feet for us to act quicker, yeah, to actually get this technology working and working in places that really need it. That's the thing for me. We seem to, in this world, wait till the last possible minute to pull this stuff off, and then we don't do very well at it. So I suggest we all figure out how to find our Zen core. And this is the true thing I'm saying. Instead of getting in that, I saw that video of American Outfitters, I think, in a mall somewhere on Black Friday. And Trace made me think of that. Just a herd of people trampling each other to get in there for who knows what the crap, a pack of socks that were on sale, or I don't know what. The idea that we would be doing that for water and food, really, truly frightening, because that's then survivor. It's survival. It's not just, or survivor.
It's real life survivor. Great band. Yeah.
Real life survivor. standing in the rain, you know, head hung low, all that. But what I'm getting at, moreover, is that the idea of that fight for the survival scares me more than the actual need to survive. I would like to train myself to be able to sit in a yoga like position on a peak somewhere and just let the ravages of both famine and lack of water just slowly destroy me, but I am able to sit there and sort of take it in monk style or something. I know that sounds weird, but I think about that. Like, I want to be better prepared. I want to be better prepared mentally and emotionally for these sorts of crises than I do so much as actually having the stuff. I mean, I want to have the stuff, trust me, but I'm just saying, you know, I want to be ready to not be trampling people or punching a grandma to get the last pomegranate or whatever. That's a weird thing to get from a grandma.
There probably aren't a lot of people in this country that are prepared mentally for something like that. I mean, our culture's not built that way.
Yep, I agree.
That's the
conventional
scares me
wisdom. More.
Yeah. I am looking to NASA to start this.
Great.
Freeze-dried food, drinking our own urine. You guys are doing it.
We're halfway NASA. There, baby.
Yeah. Any other thoughts, Trace, before we move on?
Well, you know, you bring up NASA, and I think we've seen this happen before. We're going to put every plant and tree into a spaceship, and then they're going to lose interest, and they're going to blow up the spaceships. It's happened before.
Yeah. And then we're done.
And we're out.
Yeah.
That's depressing.
If Star Trek has taught us anything. Ryan, we'll move to you then for your short-term predictions. Something you think maybe will happen in the next few years. What do you have?
So I tried to think of something maybe less depressing, something that would be uplifting as opposed to putting Scott into fear for wanting to be a monk and all that kind of stuff. So I looked at my focus in life is PC hardware, really. And something that we discuss a lot on our show is this kind of battle between PC and console gaming. And my prediction is in the next 3 to 5 years, so relatively close here, we'll see a merger of these two ideas. The idea of PC gaming and console gaming will come into one idea. I would actually even point it to a specific generation of projects, not the next pending edition of consoles, PlayStation 4, whatever they're going to call it, the Xbox 720, but the one immediately following that, I think will be almost indistinguishable between console gaming and PC gaming. And the reasons are that, well, we see a lot of this already. If you look at the kind of progression of gaming on both of these types of devices, we've seen online connectivity that was originally only it was a PC exclusive thing. You wanted to do network gaming, you wanted to play games with your friends that weren't sitting in the same room or sitting in front of the same screen. It was PC only. We've seen that move over into the console world. It's becoming a very key feature. What they call downloadable content on the consoles now is essentially just map packs that have existed on the PC since, you know, the ages of Doom and before, right? But then you look at things on the PC today, we've already seen this kind of leveling off of graphics performance, is leveling off of a need for hardware. Developers don't want to have to address so many different levels of complexity in graphics hardware and computing hardware on a PC. And you also see things like even the new Skyrim game on the PC plays better with a controller than a mouse and a keyboard because user interface was really designed for that. So I really see that these two items will merge into a single entity. You'll see basically you'll kind of Microsoft and Sony may not be the major players anymore because they'll basically have to be software services companies, not hardware companies. We're going to see one kind of platform. We thought we were going to get that with this upcoming generation, but there were still some hardware hiccups. One kind of single platform for consoles. It will be the same across PCs and consoles. I do think we'll still keep some of the upgradability that you see on PCs today for gaming that you do not have in consoles. I would imagine, you know, being able to buy different levels of hardware for console, but it will still be a self-contained box that you'll be able to buy and plug in, and it'll just work. But you'll be able to do things like mods, more kind of DLC, hack in there a little bit more, do hardware upgrades, those types of things, all without having to lose the benefits of either. I really think, despite the fact that both of these sides are rabidly opposed to one another, that we will see a merger of these two ideas of gaming, PC and console.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Ryan. Also, I think it's interesting that we're seeing a lot of middle solutions now. So we're seeing things like OnLive try to capture some of that, what you're talking about. Now, they're doing it with like thin client, heavy duty server, and it's all about connectivity and services, not really an upgradable piece of hardware that's tinkerable and mess aroundable and all of that. But that's really the one big divide that's left. So my 360 and PS3, which sit over there on a TV, and right next to it, my high-powered PC, those three things for me are all about, well, what experience am I getting right now on this one platform? Well, it's unique to it, and it's only available there, so that's where I'm going to get it and play it. And the same is true of the PC. If there's a version for all three, I tend to go PC because I can get more out of it in terms of, you know, graphical prowess and resolution and whatnot. But it does still seem to me like that is the big hitching point. Microsoft doesn't want you to be able to tinker with an Xbox 720 or 360 or whatever version is next.
1440.
And right. And PlayStation doesn't either. They don't want their PlayStation 4 to be a thing that, well, even the PS3, which had a little bit of that with being able to load Linux on it, they pulled that away and it made it even less tinkerable. So what is the thing that gets us over that hump? What makes companies stop being so stingy with closed platforms and start opening it up like the hallmark of the PC, which is this big open platform where you can develop anything, tweak anything, mod anything? What is there an impetus for that? What is the moment of change for that?
I don't think they're going to have a choice because once hardware becomes unified between these platforms, PC, PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo, whatever it is, once they're
and we're cut off. You back?
Yep, he's back.
You guys there?
Yeah, you said once they're uniform, and then you
once,
froze.
Once these are uniform platforms, they're not going to have a choice because one game from the next, one gamer is not going to notice a hardware difference. Like right now, somebody picks a PlayStation 3 either because there's a particular PlayStation exclusive title or there's an Xbox exclusive title that they want to keep, that they want access to. Once they're even across the field, it's really down to the developer selling it to everybody, right? Developers kind of don't pick the PC for a couple of reasons right now as their primary focus point. Piracy is one. I think that's overrated, but mostly because the install base is kind of in flux all the time, whereas you know what that is with the Xbox 360 or the PlayStation 3. So I don't think Microsoft's going to want this. I don't think Sony's going to want this, but I think it will happen once we find a common platform between everything. It's kind of like once you had a common platform for television screens, what else can a TV, what else can Vizio or Sony or Toshiba do to make their TV different? There's very little. We can all watch the same content on it, and that's eventually what it'll be. It's interesting you brought up OnLive because I don't think that will, in the short term, 5 years, ever really come to play because of bandwidth limitations across the entire world, not just in our country, but also latency. And there's technological issues there. What I think could work, but it still requires a hefty amount of local processing power, is instead of streaming you compressed video, which is basically what OnLive and those kind of companies do now, they send you the raw data. And then you have your local hardware actually render that locally and display it on your screen. So all the high bandwidth type stuff between your display and the graphics card all happens locally. And I think that's pretty close to seeing a merger of a PC and console type device, that then you still have some of the advantages of OnLive, of being able to play on your iPad, maybe with lesser, you know, graphic intensity, while playing on your high-end console or PC type device and getting a much different experience, but the same type of gameplay.
I think that's why we're seeing Microsoft and Sony doing so much to pitch their products as entertainment centers, not just game consoles. They're trying to say, look, we belong in your home theater. We're gonna give you television shows. We're gonna be your place to rent movies. We're gonna be a social platform where you can hang out with your friends and make Skype calls and do all this stuff. Trace, do you have a game console?
I do. I have got the 360, and it's separate from everything else. It's not hooked up to. Well, I don't have cable anymore.
Okay.
So it's not hooked up to television. It's in its own room, and that's where I go to play the game. I might sometimes find the game on like iPhone or iPad or the Mac, and then want to find that version for the 360. But I'm pretty much a caveman when it comes to this stuff. I don't know how to hook stuff up. I want it easy. I want to go get it and plug it in and play it.
So you don't take advantage of any of the entertainment options of the Xbox? You just use it as a game console?
I'm not even hooked up online with my 360. I'm such a hermit, you know, that I don't want to be connected to anybody. You know, I don't want to play some kid that's better than me because everyone is better than me.
That's why I never play online for the same reason. Yeah.
Yeah. But I thoroughly enjoy games, and they just keep getting better and better. And I was never really, you know, a Mario player or those games. But now they're so, you know, it's a cliche, but they really are like a movie. And I'll play them over and over and over again.
Could you see yourself buying a PC the next time when your Xbox 360 finally gets so old? And you're like, I should upgrade to whatever's new. And like Ryan's saying, where you go to the store and it's just like, oh, well, there's really no difference. You can get the same games for all of them.
Yeah, if there's no difference, I just want the game to look great and play great. And whatever platform or whatever computer it's on, I don't really care.
Yeah, and this is kind of happening with PCs now. I mean, you could argue that Steam, in terms of a service, has provided a very console-like experience in that I can get games through a marketplace structure and get them easily and manage them easily, and they update easily. And I mean, they've done... love it or hate it, Steam has done wonders for the PC as a platform in this generation. And it's really fantastic. And I love that experience. And so I think we're kind of, I mean, the more I've been thinking about this, everyone's been talking, I think we're kind of there, Ryan, in a way. We are at this place where we are kind of providing the multi-platform stuff in a very seamless way across all platforms. I just think in the future, for me to think of the 360 as a unified platform where they're all kind of intermingling. I'm playing games with people on other platforms in real time, despite whatever control method they're using. It needs to be a box I can plug my keyboard or mouse into if I want, or plug my other alternate input devices into, and that I can upgrade and update video and, you know, kind of take it down the path that the PC has. Because the only way this works is those guys get looser with the way they do their stuff, that is to say consoles, but the PC constricts a little bit to line up as well. Because
they're already kind of doing that, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're talking about Steam doing that already. Console, you look at consoles, they're becoming more complicated. How many times you turn on your console and it needs to download a game update?
Every time.
It needs to update your, you know, your console that way. And then, so they're moving towards PCs that way. PCs are moving towards consoles with things like Steam, with things like NVIDIA's new driver packages that do automatic updates in the background, automatic patches on World of Warcraft and Skyrim and those types of games. It's the PC knew, they found out like 5 years ago, they basically said, look, people are going to leave PC gaming because we have created an user unfriendly experience, right? Patches, downloads, crashes. They've been working really hard to try to fix that, to the chagrin of many hardcore PC gamers that like to tinker with things, that like settings, that like knobs and turns and dials and those types of things that they have been taking away from PC gaming, to make it more simplified and install the game. Or, you know, I mean, if you've got Steam, you basically double click it and say go. You wait a while for it to download, depending on your internet speed, and then you just hit the button again and you go. I mean, that's as simple to me. Maybe not as quick, but it's as simple as inserting an Xbox 360 disc into your console.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, bringing us into the future, Ford, featuring Sync with My Ford Touch. Sync is the in-car communication service, entertainment, and connectivity system that's voice-activated to help you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. One of the great features of Sync is Sync Services, giving you audible turn-by-turn directions to where you want to go, displaying directional arrows on screen, all without having to purchase an aftermarket or integrated navigation system. You don't buy anything. You got Sync. You got GPS. You've got directions. Sing Services also includes business search of over 40 million businesses, including telephone numbers and business information. Send to Sync is my favorite part of this. You actually can create your map from home. You use Google Maps or MapQuest on your home or office computer. Save it online to your Sync Traffic Directions and Information Systems account. And then when you get in the car, you just use voice commands in your vehicle to get the turn-by-turn directions. If you say you put in a work map or you put in a home map, you just say, take me home. It takes you there, tells you all the directions, puts the arrows on the screen for you. Ford Tech Nav Plus. You can get traffic updates sent to your mobile phone via text message. It's all there, designed to keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road and get you where you need to go. Ford Sync with My Ford Touch is available in the 2012 Ford Focus. You can learn more about this and other technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. We thank them for their support of Forecast. Let's move into the long-term predictions. These are the more in 100 years sorts of things. And Trace, we'll start with you. What's your long-term view look like?
After we come back from the food and water crisis, which will last for a while, we do survive.
Good.
It's ugly, and it weeds out a lot of people.
We're
which is
starving
be nice.
And thin.
But we're in a new sort of Middle Ages. Well, it's a more technology driven Middle Ages. We've kind of settled our differences with energy and lack of resources, and it's a more peaceful time. We live in villages that are more connected to each other. We learn to share more, and it's a more utopian view of the future.
Wow! So I love this. We don't get enough of this, Tom.
Well, I like the combination of like, yeah, a lot of us died. It was bad. But mm-hmm. we still have technology. We don't go into a dark ages, just the Middle Ages. And we also are able to live more peacefully because there's fewer people. There's not people fighting all the time. So
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I'm this makes me think of something I was going to say earlier and I decided to hold back on it. But is it terrible for me to, this is bad. All right, let's say we get another super flu.
Want everyone to die?
Let's say a super flu rolls in and takes out 3 billion people, just as a number, all right? That's a lot of people. Now let's forget about the mess and trying to bury that many people and deal with all that. But 3 million people taken out by the super flu. There is kind of a collective sigh of relief, isn't there, from all the survivors, everybody who lives?
And a huge survivor guilt, too.
Right. But they immediately go, no water war. No, we got plenty of oil now because how come we're not going to all use it? I mean, there's all sorts of things that suddenly become way less critical, and maybe all you're doing is delaying the inevitable. But the delay sometimes is kind of nice to find out your deadline got moved.
Well, it's a take on the recession, right? I mean, right, in the recession, right. Everybody's like, "Oh, well, we're not using up resources as fast now because nobody can afford anything."
Exactly, exactly. It won't be pretty, like you say. You got to deal with all those people that have passed, but maybe. We learn to live with that too. We learn to live with guilt. It'll be the age of guilt, but we'll get by. You know, it's like, oh God, it was just horrible last week. But the solar collector is working much better now because it's sunnier more often. So gone away and.
Yeah, right. Black Friday's pretty, it's still, it's a depressing day.
It's Black Death Friday now. But
way less, I knew you were going to say that, way less people to deal with. I mean, that sounds terrible. I mean, yes, we'd all feel guilty, but there has to be some of that. I mean, that's how the human race has always sort of thinned the herd as these big, terrible disasters come. I don't know why it's making me laugh to talk about it, but for some reason it is.
Laughing in the face of mass death.
I guess so.
Scott Johnson for you. Yeah. No, Tracy, what I like about your prediction is that you acknowledge that even if this mass disaster happens, it's unlikely to wipe out humanity. So some of us make it through. And it's probably unlikely to wipe out all of our information and technology. The Middle Ages, they still had wheels. They still they still had a lot of technology that had been developed. They just lost a chunk of it. So, yeah, solar collectors might hang around. We might still have, wireless information transmission. It would be interesting to ponder what things we would lose that would be thought of as unimportant. It's hard to predict. Ryan, what do you think of this new Middle Ages we're headed for?
I think it sounds wonderful, except for all the dead people. Rather than bury them, I would send them into space, personally. I mean, somebody in the chat room said burn them, but I was thinking all the pollution that would provide as well.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the idea of everybody living in little villages. Like, are we talking, you know, just smaller communities? Or are we talking sawmill-type villages? What is your idea about our kind of living environment there when you specifically said villages?
Well, little clusters of people that rely on themselves in each other to sustain the community. So, you know, maybe it's like a blacksmith or whatever the equivalent would be. There's a farmer, there's, you know, and everyone has to cooperate to get all of these resources pooled and shared through the community. There's probably some big tyrant somewhere still that will rule everybody, because it always works out that way. You know, there's always the 1% guy that's going to, you know, but that's what you deal with. And that gives the future comedians then something to react against. So they'll still be employed, too.
Somebody in the chat room proposed the name The Gilted Age.
The Gilted Age. Fantastic.
The Gilted Age. Perfect.
Yeah, it's a you know what, I'm a big believer in this whole let the village come together and build like smaller, more concentrated ways of not only surviving but thriving. But then it sort of turns into more rivalries, more contested area, more. I mean, the Civil War really is just about, it's about a lot of things, but the Civil War was about the fact that we hadn't quite come to grips that the entire United States should be working together on anything. You know, that we've got our way down here and you guys got your way up there and never the twain shall meet. And we kind of figured out our way through that by killing a lot of people and, you know, having some terrible times. But we got there. And if we go reset to this thing where we're all working in these small villages, aren't we resetting our ability to also work on a macro level? And that scares me just a little bit.
I feel like the positives of village life are privacy becomes less of an issue. You actually have less privacy in a smaller town, but you also don't need to worry about privacy as much because you know the people around you. It's not this issue of like walking down the street and, well, I don't know if that guy's, you know, got it out for me or not. You know where you stand in a smaller location, and you know who to rely on. People are more willing to help each other out because they know each other. But the benefits of cities are serendipity. You get more innovation. You get more intelligence and more advancements out of cities because you have more minds combining and running into each other and bouncing ideas off of each other. And I think this idea is preserving the best of both worlds in a way, because we keep the technology that allows us to have a global village, if you will, and bounce ideas off each other and encounter each other, but live in a simpler way that takes the advantages of low concentration population where we don't have to be worrying all the time about our safety.
Yeah, it's a smart village. It's, you know, we won't, as like you said, we're not going to lose everything. We won't lose the wheel. We're not going to wind up with, you know, like in the Time Machine where we're just all blonde and have bad haircuts and wear drapes and, you know.
Unless we're furry and live underground. Yeah. It's one or the other.
Well, there will be those people too.
1% of the Eloi.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't predict it's going to stay that way forever. I think it will, you know, population will increase again.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll fall back in on itself, but. We're going to have a nice summer in the Gilted Age.
Can we just have a nice Gilted Age?
Couple of generations of just chilling, you know? Like, that sounds really nice to me. Like, just forget about elections and blah.
No
like,
more this road rage. Back.
Yeah, just go back to who's bringing the water from the well today. I think Bill's doing it. Sweet. I'll see Bill later then.
Yeah.
You know, just clean it up. Simplify. Simplification is what this is. And I kind of like that.
It's a world designed by Apple. All right. To your long-term predictions, Mr. Shrout, the more in 100 years we'll be in flying cars sort of thing. What do you have?
So I actually did more. I'm kind of like a 50 to 75 for this.
That's
one.
That's great. That's fine.
So kind of in terms of interface, moving beyond gaming, I think the idea of, I'm sure you've talked about this a lot on the show, the idea of human implants, but not cybernetics or anything like that, but I'm talking about things that are actually in research now that will probably happen in that 50-year time span. Things like the virtual retina scanners. I don't know if you guys have seen the research done on that, where basically right now they're goofy-looking hats that you wear that have lasers pointing at your eye, which sounds really dangerous. But what they do is very cool by being able to focus light directly on – they can emulate pixels in any part of your vision by – shining light directly onto the retina, bypassing your, you know, your own eyes' lenses and those types of things, which makes it really cool because even blind people will be able to see these types of things if they have those portions working. So, you know, it gets, if you're nearsighted, you could have cameras that then project the images back into your onto your retina directly, and you can see perfectly again. There's a lot of ideas like that. You know, a lot of this, unfortunately, I'm sure it happens a lot as well, is when you're reading new books, new science fiction kind of comes to play. I just finished reading Ready Player One, which I know great you book. Guys have talked about. It's a great book, and there's a lot of interesting ideas in there. I actually did an interview with John Carmack, who was a creator of Doom and Quake and those games. And in terms of being able to see into the future, this is a guy that I think you really put a lot of faith in terms of display technology, kind of interactivity. He also happens to build spaceships, which is good to have on your resume, I guess.
Yeah, right.
And he is a big proponent of the virtual retina scanners. I'm trying to remember what the other name for that is. I think it might be more common. But he thinks that will be the next big wave in gaming, you know, that the idea of 3D glasses and 3D technology is not where you want to be, but virtual scanning directly on there. And this goes into the worlds of augmentation, just reality augmentation. So you're walking around, you've always got your messaging up in here, and this can actually happen very easily, although, you know, hopefully we don't have to wear the hats that I've seen in some of these demonstrations.
Or at least they make them more fashionable.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, they say these could be implanted in glasses. I'm thinking even more along the lines of something kind of embedded in the side of your head here that kind of has direct ocular throughput, I guess I would say, pass through. So it
will input without actually messing with your eyes then, just sort of separate and, yeah.
So it basically, you know, you put a little pass through in there, a little computer chip pass through. They, you know, it sounds safe to me. Cut the cords from the back of your eyes that go to your brain and put something in between them.
Hey, if they're not working anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
And the same thing with audio as well. You can implant some stuff just right behind the ear that has easy access into that. And it revolutionizes the way we interact with anything or how we get information. If we think you sit down now in front of Google, you can get all the information you want. Well, now all you have to do is think about it and you're getting this information that you want. It has all kinds of implications for just if we can get this in everybody all of the time, not only will we all be easily tracked, which would be great, I'm sure.
The malls are already doing it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and this is kind of scary as well. It's big brotherish, something else for to track. But maybe you don't get that GPS chip implanted behind your eye either. But I think my prediction is that we have real augmentation. So we know there's demos where you've seen at CES where you hold up your phone and it's kind of got this janky little line. It's supposed to be, you know, well, this is pointing at this restaurant with a review from your friend. We actually get this in the next 50 years. And I hope it happens soon because I want to be alive to see it personally.
See it. Literally.
Literally. Yeah. See it.
You would do it? You would try it?
I wouldn't be first in line.
But you're not going to beta test it. In other words,
I have been told to have LASIK surgery by my wife for the last 10 years. And it's one of those things that's like, lasers in my eyes. But some reason, point this laser at my eye.
Better in your eyes than your gums.
Yeah, that's true. I can vouch for that. I can. I would say I'm supposed to also be an excellent candidate for LASIK, and I have the same problem. They're my eyes, and it scares the crap out of me. I don't know if this is just old man Scott talking or what, but I just don't. That scares me so bad because they are the only two I have. So until they've got backups or some other plan like that, I have been very resistant to that, even though everyone around me who does it is like, it's the best thing I ever did. And I just still think, well, they do have that little 5% failure rate thing that they always put on the paper you got to sign. Somebody out there.
That's high, yeah.
Well, whatever it is. I shouldn't even say that. I don't want to disparage them, but it scares the crap out of me. But on the other hand, you ask me if I'm into this augmented stuff. I totally am. This idea of being able to augment our existing organs, our arms, our muscle structure, or whatever, to be better, faster, stronger, you know, is interesting to me. Trace, do you have where I know where you stand on video games and hooking those up to the internet? How do you stand on, you know, fake eyes or augmented eyes?
They'd have to be plug and play. You know, it would have to be so easy. You know, like I'm with you with LASIK. I just keep buying crappy prescription glasses. And that's pretty painless, but it's also annoying. So if I could go in and go, you know, knock a couple of eyeballs in, and it's like, hey, that's pretty good. Give me an arm, too. And, you know, my spleen isn't working so good. So just screw something in there. I think I'm all for that, you know. My knees. I'm going to have knee replacement one day. It's happening now. So why is another body part any different?
So you want it to be snap-on, though, not no surgery required.
I would like the easy in and out, you know. It's more like going to Best Buy, you know. It's like, you know, I'll have a couple eyes, and and I'm out of here.
Yeah,
20 minutes. Trust the kid at Best Buy to recommend the best eyes for you?
Well, okay, Best Buy is probably not the greatest idea. Maybe more of more like an Apple store.
Magnolia or an Apple store. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Netflix. Netflix streams thousands of TV movies and TV episodes right to your eyes, although you have to use a screen to get them there. But you can watch them all for a month for free thanks to their special offer for Twit users. Watch them on an Xbox, PS3, Nintendo Wii, watch them on a Roku, Apple TV, they're pretty much everywhere. And you get it all for $7.99 a month. Try it out for free, though. You don't have to pay a thing for the free trial. Netflix.com/twit. You can watch all the TV and movies that you can fit into that month at one price, free. And then if you decide to keep it, you get the regular price from then on. And by the way, if you're already a Netflix subscriber, pass that URL on. Anybody could use it. Netflix.com/twit. We thank them for their support of Forecast. So we go into some crazy-ass predictions now, and Ryan, we'll start with you this time. One really far out there forecast, what do you got?
So I was listening to Trace's Happy Village kind of prediction, and I was like, oh, well, that's going to be real downer, because mine is the exact opposite of that. Way out in the future, we hit that field, that part that's so much science fiction, so many video games are based on, the idea of a nuclear winter, a rebirth of society. How would we all kind of react to those types of things? I mentioned here in my notes, as like, well, maybe this happens because of weapons. You know, nuclear technology gets into the wrong hands. Eventually, somebody in the human race is going to accidentally or on purpose hit that button. Maybe it's technology. Maybe we get hackers that take down all of the power plants. They have that capability. They do that, shuts us all down. We have no electric for decades. They blow up all those types of things. It could be disease. We talked about the mega flu earlier. I've often subscribed to what I call the George Carlin theory on human evolution, that if the Earth really wants to get rid of us,
it will
do it, and it will be disease. It will come up with a way to do that if it really thinks we're doing that. And then, of course, the obvious out is robots, Terminator 2 style, Matrix style, something like that. I don't think we'll get down to, I was trying to think of it in a game analogy again. I don't think we'll get back to the Skyrim era of the world where we're doing blacksmithing or anything like that. But I do think if you've played a game like Rage or Borderlands, those types of games where we have total annihilation of almost everybody on the Earth, we all come back up from our bunkers. It's all brown, but we have guns. So therefore, we can start civilization over again, because if I've learned anything, that the only way to have civilization is with weapons.
Right. If video games have taught us anything, that is true.
Yeah. Video games, movies, I don't know, the Middle Ages, those types of things. Weapons are important for civilization to occur. So, I don't really have a specific on what will cause it. And I think it's in terms of, I don't know, this might be my 100 to 200 year prediction, unfortunately. But I think it could be a combination of technology, disease, weather, nuclear explosions, this robotic massacre that will inevitably occur. I think that's without saying.
There's kind of a purity to the idea that there is a future so bleak that you, you know, come out into the wasteland and you have to build your own weapons. And I don't know what it is, but that's always appealed to me on some weird level. I think that's the reason I like post-apocalyptic films. I want to be the roadrunner because really it's just, it's all on him. He has nobody else to blame things on. He's got nobody else to really worry about other than his dog and occasionally a third or fourth character for a minute or two. But the most of his existence is out on that road. It's him and it's his car and it's his dog. And he's just got to get more gas for it. And whatever you got to do to get it, you do it. And there's a purity to that. It's difficult to describe, but I actually think these games trade on that idea. I feel like I'm playing Skyrim and loving every second of it. And part of what I love, again, is this lone wolf mentality that I have for my character. I don't need anybody to get along. I don't have to have friends in town. I can just do my own thing and survive. And I can do things for other people. And I can make choices that are you know, I don't know, well thought of from the people. Or I can make bad choices. But either way, it's all down to me. And I don't have anybody else to blame it on. And it's just kind of go time all the time. There's no sitting around going, oh, I wonder if we'll ever have a water war. We're just having one. And I just have to deal with it. And there's something
the
about that I like. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That may sound weird. But I've always seen that like that. And part of me likes when an emergency happens because I can go into emergency mode. So when something bad happens, if I'm in a car accident or I see one and I can help or something, it just becomes pure and mathematic. It's ones and zeros. I can just see that there was a car accident and I can see that there's a lady in front and she needs to get out and I can rush into that mode and go for it. And instead of being sitting back and going, oh, I hope there's never a car wreck, I can actually deal with one. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
Trace, can you make any sense of what he's talking?
I'm really attracted to those games, the Wasteland games, Borderland, and those post-apocalyptic and all that's left is guns. And I don't know if it's the hermit nature that appeals to me, but my sniper skills are really good. So a hermit who's a good sniper, I if there's a place for me in the future, that's those Wasteland environments. I don't have to be near people, but I can still kill them.
I mean, doesn't it seem inevitable that we will destroy ourselves? I'm sure that comes up all the time as a prediction, but it's like eventually there'll be so much power to be individually utilized. We look at, I'm not just talking about weapons, but if you look at the technological power that some of these groups have, if you look at what Anonymous has been able to do over the course of its existence, eventually that power will become even greater, right? We've already seen, the nuclear reactors that were taken down in Iran, basically through a computer virus, right? Those types of things are already happening. Eventually, surely we don't all believe that human decency will last for eternity.
Yeah, right? Decency, right? I mean, I think destroying humanity is harder than we like to give people credit for.
I hope so.
We've survived this long. That's why I liked the Middle Ages prediction so much, is that I think it's the easy prediction to say, well, something will wipe us out, because you're totally right. There are so many things that have the capability. I mean, and I think it's because we live in that age where we finally got the ultimate way to wipe us out, right? We got that nuclear bomb that could, like, you know, on paper, we're like, we could do this. We really wouldn't be that hard. But I think it's harder than we think.
I hope so. And as Monkey Stick says in the chat room, we did already live through the Jersey Shore.
Yep. never forget.
Darkest days of our culture. Yep. All right. Let's move over to you, Trace, for your crazy prediction. Time frame doesn't matter. Just take the leap. What do you got?
Much, much, much farther into the future. We've survived my village era. And we are right back where we are right now. We have gone through that cycle where we've grown back up out of village into a more industrial time, a more technological time, and we're right back where we are right now. This is the future. So this is as good as it's going to get.
Have we done this already?
We have.
Yes. Yes. It kind of like the end of Battlestar Galactica.
I knew that. I was like, yeah.
The new one.
Because
I would not like to be trapped in the end of the old one. I can tell you that.
Well,
right.
The outfits, if nothing else.
Yeah. How did the original one end? It didn't end with some weird overly spiritual...
Well, do you count Galactica 1980?
No,
yeah, that is off canon. Yeah, they came back on like motorcycles or something.
I want to come back as Lauren Green. Does that count as anything? I don't know if it does or not. Probably not.
there's something to this idea, though, that everything goes in circles and that we'll get back to a point where we feel like, you know, like we're so advanced, but we'll really just be doing the same thing over again. There's actually some people believe that there, before recorded history, that this happened, that we actually did have a technologically advanced race, and it gave rise to the pyramids and all of these legends about Atlantis, and that we wiped ourselves out in such a way that we can't remember anything but the last vestiges of that, and that, you know, Greek culture and everything after that was just, you know, starting the whole process over again.
It just keeps rising and falling and crashing against that wall.
So you guys are at opposites here, Ryan. You're saying we're going to hit one wall too many and that's it.
Well, I still believe that some culture will survive, right? So I believe that there will be people underground and they will come up in 30 years after all that happens. They will restart things, but it will be much more bleak than the village path that Trace thought we would take. But I do love this idea that we've done this before. I have no problem believing that, right? So, I mean, it seems the most plausible explanation for the pyramids as far as I'm concerned.
How do we know where the wall is, though? Like, we say we've done this before, but we also say it with a tone of, and we're almost there now. But how far are we from the wall, do you think, Trace?
I think we're still quite a ways away, probably 500 years.
Okay.
And we might miss it. We could miss the wall.
Could jump the wall.
Yeah, we could.
That's going to be my phrase. I hope we all jump the wall.
It's my Pink Floyd cover band.
Nice. All right. Well, if we've done this before, then you'll already know the answers to four questions.
That's right. Four questions is where we ask our guests four questions, rapid fire style. They are not allowed to think too hard about it. They have to answer from the gut. I will start. I'm asking Trace his questions. Trace, are you sitting comfortably?
Yes.
All right. Here we go. I can't believe I'm asking questions of someone who was on Freaks and Geeks, one of my favorite shows of all time. What food item that humans really enjoy will most horrify aliens?
Breakfast cereal.
Good one.
It's the marshmallows little particles. Little particles. Yeah. They don't like that. One. They like a big thing.
Here we go. Question number two. Which would you rather be buried alive in? Dirt? Or millions of skittering nanobots, and why?
Nanobots. I've done the dirt thing. I'd like to try something new.
Okay, fair enough. Let's see. I missed one. If men are from Mars and women are from Venus, what planet are dogs from?
Pluto. Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not a planet. Trick question.
Trick question.
It's a dwarf. Well, a dwarf planet. Scott didn't specify.
Little dogs.
Oh, okay.
Little chihuahuas are from a dwarf planet. And then finally, Japan already has 20-something different flavors of Kit Kat candy bars. I'm actually holding a one now that is wasabi-flavored, if you can believe it, in my hand. What flavor would you like to see invented for this venerable treat?
The Kit Kat?
Yeah.
Kit Kat flavored. Have they tried that one yet?
Self-referential flavor.
I think they have. As far as I know, that is.
It doesn't test well.
That's the default.
then what's the green stuff that you get with sushi, that flavor? They must have that already.
They do, right here. Wasabi. I've got it in my hand.
That's okay. That's wasabi. That's
yeah,
wasabi.
So they literally have that already.
Who would
see, this
do
is
that
a harder question than you thought.
Why would you mess with a Kit Kat?
Trick or treat.
I will accept that as an answer. That's actually pretty good. Congratulations, you have passed. Tom, I passed the veritable baton to you.
I am a big fan of the Kit Kat myself. And I have to say, I do like the dark chocolate Kit Kat.
That's not bad. But we only get like three of them, Tom. We get three flavors here in the States.
Yeah.
In Japan, I have eaten flan flavored, like the little flan things you get at restaurants. I've had some kind of weird flour flavored one. Like they're crazy over there. And
like
I've had some amazing
flour,
stuff.
Like what you make bread out of, or flour like something you sniff?
Like you'd pick and put in your hair. And then there's another one. My favorite was this cherry. It was cherry apples, which I don't even know what that is. And it was fantastic. It was amazing. So Japan, way to go, Japan.
See, Trace, if you get nothing else out of the show, you have learned about Kit Kats.
I'm going to find those. I'm going to get some Japanese Kit Kats.
You can import them. They're good.
All right, Ryan, let's go to you. You ready for four questions?
I'll do what I can. Testing is my strong suit.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Sure.
Good. Then we'll begin. Question number one. Do we need to worry that cows will one day revolt and conquer us all?
I think that goes without saying. They've been silent for too long.
Yeah, I don't trust them. Question number two. That Demolition Man prediction about all restaurants being Taco Bell one day is a joke. We all know it will be what restaurant someday that all restaurants will be?
It can't be Taco Bell still. McDonald's is too easy. I'm going to go with Applebee's.
Applebee's?
Yeah, yeah. It's family fun.
We'll be eating good in all the neighborhoods.
Exactly, all the villages.
Question number three. What will the first robot president be like?
He'll be just like George W. Bush because they had a sense of humor.
Are you saying we've already had the first robot president?
Maybe.
And question number four, what will be the first cosmetic appendage to become widely popular?
Second noses.
The second nose.
Yeah. You know.
Ryan, it's a lovely second nose. Where did you get that?
Yeah.
It was
I'm just glad he said nose. That's all.
Yes, definitely. All right. Thank you very much. That is your four questions. We appreciate everybody being on the show today. Great show. Ryan Shrout, editor-in-chief at PC Perspective. Let folks know about that, the podcast you do, and where they can find all you do online.
Yeah, so that's all. You can find us at pcper.com. We do a lot of hardware reviews. If you're building a new PC, that is the place to stop by. And then obviously on the Twit Network, I host This Week in Computer Hardware with Patrick Norton right here on Thursdays.
Excellent.
So check that out.
Excellent show. And Trace Beaulieu, really a pleasure to have you on the show as well. Let folks know not just about Cinematic Titanic, but the books you're doing and all the other stuff and where they can find all this stuff online.
Cinematic Titanic, we're touring. We'll be at the Keswick Theater in Glenside, Pennsylvania on December 30th. My book, Silly Rhymes for Belligerent Children, is available at just go to ThinkGeek. It's easier than tracebeaulieu.com/silly rhymes. I'm afraid of vowels. And then next week, Frank Conniff from Mystery Science Theater and Cinematic Titanic and Dana Gould and I will be making fun of Plan 9 from Outer Space in Seattle at the Uptown Theater.
Oh, very nice. Very cool.
That's fantastic. On the 8th.
And you'll probably have a room full of people asking you to tell him to push the button.
Exactly. Exactly.
That'll be
Frank
fun.
Loves to push the button. He just goes pushing everything.
Excellent. Well, thank you both again. Thank you, Scott Johnson. As always, glad to have you back. Glad your dental problems resolved themselves well. Anything to tell the folks before we get out of here?
Yes, I'd like to tell them, first of all, the mention of Dana Gould brought back memories of a game called Gex on the 3DO. I just throwing that out there. He was the voice of the stupid lizard, and I'm a big Dana Gould fan. Anyway, that is not what I was going to say. What I do want to say is this. There is a world of audio podcast delight to be had at frogpants.com, as many of you know. Today, we announced the launch of a brand new show to support the upcoming massively multiplayer online game known as Star Wars, The Old Republic. It is called The Instance, The Old Republic Edition. If you're familiar with The Instance for World of Warcraft, then you may have already heard about it. Just go to theinstance.net/TOR. The feed is up. Everything's there. First episode airs on Thursday. I think Jeff Cannata is our guest from the Totally Rad Show. And it'll be me and Dills talking that game to the nth degree. And I can't wait. So people should go ahead and check that out. Oh, and they can follow that on Twitter at Tor Show. I cannot believe that was available, but TOR show on Twitter.
All right. Today. Thanks, everybody, for listening or watching. Don't forget to leave comments at our website, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email to forecastpodcast@gmail.com. That's it. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks.
But it's only 32 years away.
I'm waxing on and waxing off here.
And that's the show. Thank you, guys.
Did you say you're waxing off?
I regretted it the second I said it. Yeah. I really did.